Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos. I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist. And we come to you every Thursday at 7. And I am always here with my co-host, Lori. And let me tell you, we are The Creative Alchemist. Lori is the creative, and somehow I got to be the alchemist. And we come to you to talk about business. We focus very much on small and mid-sized businesses. We have a lot of owners who listen because they are looking for ways to differentiate themselves in the marketplace, more ways to be more efficient. And in the past couple of weeks, we have not only looked at things like transferable skills, opportunities in a pandemic, we also did some focus on your health. I mean, if you don't have your own personal health, how do you run a business? So we looked at some areas where you could enhance and protect yourself from this virus environment. And today we'd like to really get back to business and look at some of the ways that you would need to prepare yourself for the future. You could say this pandemic has really made some changes in our economy, the way perhaps we're going to do business. We may never, ever go back to the what we call the normal, and not even a new normal. There may have been a paradigm shift here. But before I go on, my co-host is Lori. Let them know you're here.
Hi, I'm Lori Miller, interior designer, business entrepreneur, mental health licensed practitioner. And this is, I love being on the show, and Ted is a great co-host, and looking forward to hearing Eric speak, because this has definitely been one of my challenges as a business person and as a designer. So it's important to have your website show up, and it's important to have it look good, and that's always a challenge. So Eric, it'll be a blessing to have you, and I may even have some own, my own questions.
So before you start, Eric, We often ask a question. So today's topic is about SEO. How important is SEO in your new strategic vision? And or do you even have a post-pandemic SEO strategy? So, Eric, and you're going to give them your full name, proper pronunciation, and of your last name, and can you tell them a little bit about yourself? You have a very interesting background from where you're from. So,
yes.
Eric, please introduce yourself.
Hi, Ted. Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me today. First of all,
I hope you
and your families are surviving and you're doing well with everything that's going on these days. I'm hoping that this will pass sooner than later. But, you know, we're all in this together. So, I can go into a little bit of a background. I actually started off my career as a jewelry designer. And
Eric, before you even go there, where are you from originally?
I was born in Istanbul, Turkey.
Okay.
Very
of Armenian descent, born in Istanbul, Turkey. Came to Queens, New York, for about 9 months when I was 6 years old. And my parents were like, no, I don't think this is going to work. The winters are too cold. The summers are too hot. There's too many people. And so they came to the second biggest city in America, Los Angeles.
Right.
So there's a region of Los Angeles that's called the South Bay, which is Hermosa Beach, Manhattan Beach, or along the coastal areas. That's where I've ended up all these years. So I love the area that I live in. I love the ocean. I love the California beach life. And so that's a little bit of my background coming to the country. And
let me add, your last name is Armenian. Can you pronounce it for me correctly, the correct
Seropian
pronunciation?
Seropian.
Seropian. That's what I thought. Okay, good. And you speak Turkish and Armenian now.
I speak Turkish, Armenian, and I'm married to a Mexican, and so I'm learning Spanish. So I'm working on my fourth language. We'll see how that goes. I'm a work in progress.
So it sounds like the UN at your home, huh?
Life in America.
Absolutely. Right. Here in New York, it's like that every day. Okay. So you are what I would very comfortably categorize as an SEO expert. Can you tell people what is SEO? What does it stand for? And why should people even think about having that?
The questions that I get always, it seems like the first 6 out of 10 or 6 out of 8 always is, what does it stand for, which is search engine optimization, SEO. How can the SEO help my business? How do I use the power of SEO to get my name out, to get people to come to my website, et cetera? So a lot of times what happens is you go to Google when you're searching for something and you type in, I don't know, pizza, New York City, and up comes the listings. So first you have the listings that are paid for. So there are the paid advertisers. And then below that are the websites that Google ranks for free. It thinks so highly of it, of that website and that company, that it gives that traffic to that website for free. So a lot of times you have to optimize. You have to work towards that ranking. And that is, in a nutshell, what search engine optimization is, when you're optimizing your website, your content, everything that you need to do to get that free traffic. And these days, if you have a business without having a digital marketing campaign and some of it focused on that free traffic that comes in from Google, if you don't have that, it's going to be very difficult to survive in this economy. And so I've had probably in the last month a lot of people reach out to me that normally wouldn't have. And they have time on their hands. They've been holding off on, expanding into this field. And now they seem to have a little bit more time to find out, you know, what they can do and how it works and how much it costs and all that good stuff.
Well, so I want to ask a question, and it's definitely the result of this pandemic. And for anyone who has questions for Eric and you want to optimize your presence on the internet, on Google or other search engines, you can call us, and you'll get to speak to Eric. Our phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. So one of the things that has come out of this pandemic, Eric, is some people are unemployed, some people are working from home, and some of those unemployed people may decide to become entrepreneurs. Should they be thinking about SEO optimization?
Well, it depends. It's not going to hurt to think about it, but you have to really do your homework, and you really have to apply yourself to it. It's not that, like, Google is just going to turn over the keys to the car and say, okay, whoever's looking for this item, I'm just going to send that traffic over to you. It just doesn't work that way. So you have to be able to set aside the time or to hire someone to do the work so that you can get that traffic and run your business. And in the beginning, if you're laid off or you're between jobs or something, it's going to be difficult to spend that extra money because you don't know where your next paycheck is going to come from. You don't know how long it's going to take to get ranked with the search engines. Generally, search engine optimization takes longer than, let's say, paid ads. If I run some paid ads on Yelp, Google, Facebook, I run the ads today, I run them for a week. By the end of the week, I know how the campaign went. Did I get any leads? Did I get any sales? Did I get any phone calls? And I can see what happened. And once I've spent my money on those ads, then it's finished. I'm not expecting any more phone calls from those ads. Mm-hmm. SEO is different. Search engine optimization is different. It's something that's ongoing. You have to show consistency, as you do with everything in life, whether it's a relationship with your spouse or your friends or anything. And to back up for a second, there's an academy here in Los Angeles that I teach at. I teach search engine optimization classes. So every 8 weeks, 1 week out of eight, before coronavirus hit, we would get together. And for 1 week, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., a lot of times we would go over that. So 40 hours, we would go over about 1,000 slides to teach search engine optimization. So there's a lot to learn. It's almost like learning a language, and then after that, you have to practice it. And sometimes what happens is people come in, they want to learn a new trade, and then sometimes people come in and, you know, they've gone through so many marketers that have told them, hey, your ranking is up, we're killing it, we're crushing it, and they're not. You know, they're looking at their shopping cart on their website, or they're looking at their cash register at their restaurant or what have you, and they're not doing well. They're not doing any different than they were doing before they hired the marketer. And they got tired. Some of these people are tired of getting taken or whatever the case may be. So they want to know what it is to do this, but they don't have the time to do it. They want to be able to manage whoever they hire in the future, if that makes sense.
Yep.
A lot of sense.
So usually where I start is when somebody tells me about a business that they're going to do, I usually ask them to tell me 10 to 20 of their competitors, and then to tell me if their target market, if their ideal client was sitting in front of their computer and there's the Google search box, what would they search to find them? So I would need 10 to 20 competitors, and I would need about 20 to 30 keywords. So I would do a competitor analysis and a keyword analysis. So then you can see what your competitors are doing. Most of the websites out there, they're open source. So you can see exactly what they're doing, where they're getting their links from, which anchor text they're using, which links are coming in. You can see everything on the back end. So that's a place that you start if you want to figure out what your competitors are doing, which keywords they're ranked for. So instead of taking a pencil and a piece of paper and thinking of keywords that work for your business, you can run a report. There are apps out there. I use SEMrush. There's Ahrefs. There's SpyFu. There are many apps out there that you can give a monthly fee, and you can run these reports to see what your competitors are up to. So,
So you run the app to get it goes sort of behind the website to see which keywords. So because I was going to ask you, can you just the average person go behind someone's website and see the keywords they use?
Not the average person. You would need to know a little bit of programming to do that. But the easiest thing is if you paid like for SEMrush, I think $99 a month. And I can see a lot of things that are happening with my website, what happened in the last year, which keywords someone is ranked for. I can look at my competitors. I can look at the links that they're getting, where they're ranked, how they're ranked. It's a very powerful tool instead of doing, you know, one page at a time from one website at a time. That's a massive amount of work. So that way you can target the keywords that you're going to consider ranking for.
Okay.
That's super interesting. No, it's super interesting. Now, if someone's looking for a job, right, because, you know, there's so many people that are unemployed right now, would that be would they be able to purchase these apps? Does it have to be a specific, like someone who has that programming knowledge? Would this be good for something like that? And then we have a call or two with a question. So if you want to answer that, and I'll let them in.
Sure. Well, if they're looking for a job, the thing is, if they went to a company that hired them, a lot of times they might pay for those apps. It's not like you need 10 apps like that for just one location. So depending on the company, but if you have two or three of these apps, you're good to go for small businesses.
Okay.
That's cool. And what, caller
what's the
on
area
the line.
Code? What's the area code
516.
For the caller, Lori? 516.
Yep.
516, you're live and on the air with the Creative Alchemist.
Hi.
What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello.
I am calling from Massapequa, New York. Thank you so much for being there. I am definitely interested in the dynamics of search optimization. And I'm going to piggyback on what Lori was referencing in terms of job search. I briefly attended a little webinar on search optimization. And in terms of creating your resume based on keywords in the job description, this is what I was told to do, okay? So let's say if I'm looking for a job, which I am in this environment, so many of us are looking for jobs. If you find something, right, and you're looking in the job description, you're going to get some keywords. So then you're going to hopefully update your resume to include these keywords. So when a company is looking for candidates, yours pop up. Now, from what I was told, depending on what your keywords that you use will give you, like, you know, the top ranks of when a recruiter pick your resume versus someone else's. Is that correct?
This is within the job sites. Absolutely, that's correct. The more keywords you put in there, and you shouldn't try to stuff the keywords, because a lot of times what people do is they put, let's say they're really good at Photoshop, and they put Photoshop on the resume, you know, 10 different places. And so you don't want to overdo it. But if you're clear on, you know, your skills and maybe put it one or two other places, the algorithms for the job sites will pick those up. Absolutely.
Right. So what I'm curious about is, I understand the dynamic of the keywords, but each company, as you mentioned, have their own apps that they actually have these search engines, you know, run through all these resumes. Would it be to my advantage as an individual to, you know, maybe learn about these programming and algorithms so, you know, my percentage of getting, you know, in that high percentage of those picks? How do you feel about that? Do you think that it's worth my while to, like, investigate on how some of these companies choose these search engines and then how they use it? I mean, is that going too deep?
Well, there's two things we're talking about here. One is search engine optimization used for when you have a website and you want to drive traffic to that website in order to sell your services or your product. So that's one thing. The second thing is when you're doing a job search. So that generally is within the search apparatus of some of the search directories or companies, like, let's say, Indeed, where you can post your job there.
Right.
I'll just use them. I don't, you know, saying that they're great or they're bad. I'm using them as an example. So if you were to use them, if you went onto their site and you uploaded your resume, I think they have a service, if I'm not mistaken, I've been told, that you can call them and they will tell you, you know, they will figure out exactly what your strengths are and they will tell you how to move things around on your resume and what's missing and what else to add and things like that, so that it works within their algorithm, so that They give the best possible search results to the people that are looking for to hire someone like you. Like they want to be able to pair everybody up, or else they're going to be out of business.
Exactly.
So that would be my suggestion to do that. To go to the various ZipRecruiter, Indeed, you know, the top 5 or 10, upload it, your resume there, and then contact them and ask them, you know, can you help me? I want to make sure that. I have everything uploaded correctly and they should be helpful. If they're not, I know that there are freelancers out there that help you write a resume that is geared towards, the search engines of, the Indeed and the ZipRecruiters of the world. So it might make sense to, spend a couple bucks and meet with them online or in person or not these days in person, but online, and have them take a look at your resume and tell you, their suggestions.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. You're welcome. Hey, Eric, on the subject of people looking for jobs, and definitely lots of people doing that, would it ever make sense to have your own website about yourself looking for a job? Do people actually do that? Is that wise?
Well, I think that when you're out of a job and you don't, you're kind of being cautious with your money, to spin up a site, if you know how to build a site, great. I would say can't hurt. But otherwise, I would spend my money on making sure that the resume is tip top, and getting somebody that's a specialist, or going online and finding an app or a company that, looks through your resume and, makes the proper changes.
Right. Okay.
That would be my suggestion.
Yep. I didn't know if people actually do that or not. I would assume probably are not.
It doesn't hurt.
A lot of people doing that. Right.
Yeah. It doesn't hurt. But again, if you don't know how to build out a site, because you could go to companies like Wix and you can go and, you can build out your site for free. But then again, once you build out the site, this is where we run into the SEO factor, is that you build out a site and then what? Because Google has to know you exist, or you have to be able to hand out business cards, or you need to post it on a billboard, whatever the case may be, to get the traffic to come to your website. And so if a lot of people, they have that first step down where they build out sites. I've had friends that own dry cleaning stores that are accountants or what have you, and they build out a site and it's the same for 10 years. They haven't changed the page on it. They haven't, they make their monthly hosting fee, and they always complain to me that they're not getting any new customers or anything from the website. Well, yeah,
right.
Because you're not doing anything to optimize the site. It's very competitive out there. Everyone's running to digital marketing. They want to be able to get that traffic from Google and Yahoo and Bing, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and all those other apps to be able to better their business. And so to build out a site and then just neglect it, you're not going to get ranked. So if you're looking for a job and then you build out the website, and then what's the step behind that? You still need to be able to get in front of the right people so they could see it and hire them.
So in that case, would you – go ahead, Lori.
Yeah, I was going to say, so I have a question about hiring the right person, and then we have another caller, 917, phone number or area code for the phone number. Are there questions that you can ask to see if the person that you're interviewing actually knows how to do the SEO, or, it would entail to get your SEO up to, so people can find you?
Yes, but I don't think that it's a, one question and answer kind of a thing. I think it's a, when you interview someone, when I've been interviewed for a project with a company to do their campaign for them, it's a conversation that I have with their digital marketing team, with their webmaster, their digital marketing people, And, you know, within the conversation, you know, they ask, how would you do this if this happened? Or what about the tagging of the page? Or what is this? What is that? It's more of a conversation more than it is a couple of questions. So
right.
I know that, you know, there are certain companies that will actually give you a written test that you have to take. That way they know, they know that you know what you're talking about. And for me, I feel like it's more of a conversational thing. And, you know, if I were to work with them, they're going to know that, you know, I know what I'm talking about. And if I don't, I'll ask them, you know, because this is a changing field all the time. It's a moving target. It's not staying in the same place.
Well, if someone gives you a written test, I mean, apparently they know what they're looking for, right? They know exactly which question to ask for and if you're answering correctly. Now, what if you have someone who's just had a website up for, like you said, 10 years, it's generating zero traffic, and I would assume they may not really know what to ask for. What are the things they should look for and be prepared to ask and know whether it's the right question?
Oh, in order to hire a marketer?
To hire someone like you.
I got you. So basically what you want to find out is, you know, the best thing to do is to be able to get some kind of reference, if you can do that. Also, one of the things that I do, depending on the industry, I have a couple of people in healthcare, for instance, dentists, podiatrists, and so on, where I set up my campaign and I set up the software. So when I run my ads, when I do my SEO, I have a separate phone number for my campaigns. So what happens is at the end of the month, I can show them that you received 100 phone calls this month. And the phone calls are recorded, and it shows where it came in from. It shows everything. So we know that it came in from Google Organic or Bing, or it came in from Facebook. And so that way you can show value. You can say, this is what, you know, that's what I show. I have one client today alone. We got 142 phone calls from the campaign.
Wow.
So, you know, it didn't happen overnight. We've been building on it and working on it and so on. But that's the thing with SEO. It's difficult to build it up, but once you're in, it's difficult to get knocked off. You have to do something wrong, or your competitors have to be, you know, really crushing it or something. But otherwise, you're in. You claim that real estate.
So before I ask any more questions, Lori, let's check out this 917.
Yeah, they dropped.
Okay.
So sorry, is that 917?
So I'll give you
my question.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Eric.
So a lot of times what I do is I start off to kind of simplify this process, because sometimes it's overwhelming when you're trying to learn a new trade or to almost learn a new language. I try to break it down into almost four factors out of probably there's over 150, but I try to kind of break it down. So the first is the website itself. So the website is, in my opinion, is about 15% of what SEO is looking for, what Google is looking for. And that includes if the website is secure, if it's accessible, if it loads fast enough, because if it takes forever to load, that's not a good search experience for the users of Google. It's mobile friendly, the age of the site helps. You know, if you just spun up a site yesterday and you're looking to get ranked tomorrow, it's going to be very difficult to do that. You want to make sure that all the pages on your website are working, that you don't have broken pages. It's annoying sometimes when you go to a website and you click on contact and the contact button is broken. It leads nowhere. Or you click on a product button and it goes nowhere. You want to make sure the pages are tagged correctly. You just want to make sure that the website is smooth. And then, so that's about 15% of it. About 10 to 15% of what Google looks for when it's grading your, when it's trying to decide where to rank you, is social media. So it literally looks at your Facebook fan page, not your personal, but your Facebook and your Twitter company page, your Instagram, whatever you have, and it sees how often do you post and which direction is your following going. Did you have 100 followers in April, and then before that you had 110, and then before that you had 120? Are your followers dropping, or is it going up? Is it staying in the same place? Are you getting anybody that's commenting on your posts? You know, what's your engagement rate? If you have 100 followers and you have 10 people that are liking your posts, then a 10% engagement rate is pretty good, and so on. So it looks at social media to get some kind of bearing on where you're at, because Google is playing detective. It's trying to figure out, you know, are you legit? Is anyone complaining about you? You know, and that's the next thing is online reviews. It's about 20 to 25% of what Google is looking at when it's ranking you. So if you have people that are, you know, marking you as your website as, let's say, abusive or spam or things like that, or you go to the Yelp account and there's, you know, one star. You go to Facebook reviews and there's negative reviews all over the place. Google is reading all that. It's collecting data to see what people think of you. Because what Google is doing that no other search engine has done before is that it's literally ranking you based on what is good for the end user. So for the searcher, it's not thinking what's best for the advertiser or anything like that. Even their Google Ads, you go to Google Ads and you can put the top bid for your industry. You could say, I want interior designer in New York City within a 10-mile radius. I'll pay, the top bid is $1. I'll put in $10. I don't care. I want the top bid. Google still will look at your website and think, is this website a good fit for this keyword? And if it's not, you could bid $100. They're not going to sell you the traffic. And so Google, that's their secret sauce. That's what made them successful, where all other search engines before them, including Yahoo, failed at, is that they went for the top bidder. Oh, you're bidding top. Okay, I'll give you the organic traffic also, and, you know, all this other stuff. But the user didn't get the best possible search results. With Google, you know that when you search for something, you're getting a pretty good search result. It's not going to be a broken page. It's not going to be a spam site. It's not going to be, you know, a website. When you go to the website, it clicks over to another website. You remember those where it was like a doorway page?
Yep.
Where it would go?
Right.
They've taken away all that. So you don't have to worry about that stuff. So in exchange, if you do your job for SEO, for Google, Google says, okay, I'll take your content, I'll put it in my search engine, I'll take your pictures and I'll put it in the images, I'll take your reviews, I'll put them in places. In exchange, I will give you free traffic. So that's the exchange that you're making with Google for SEO. And the last thing that Google looked at for SEO ranking is what is called online link building. So what that means is, if I go to my website and I write about our conversation today and I blog about it and I give you a clickable link from my website to yours, I've just built a link from my site to yours. And so the more websites that are pointing to your website, the more credible sites they are, the better it's going to look in Google's eyes. That's the most time intensive, is the link building part of it. So that's about, you know, on the high end, it's about 80% of SEO. On the low end, it's maybe about 60% of search engine optimization. I always tell people, just focus on those four steps. Make sure your site is functioning at a high level. Make sure that you're doing some things on social media. You have some reviews coming in a consistent flow. And make sure you're doing some link building.
Now, Lori,
you mentioned a bad review, like bad reviews. What do you do when you have a bad review? Because I know in this day and age, everybody gets them. Yelp is known for it. So how do you handle that? I don't know if that's part of SEO, but I certainly imagine it's part of your online profile.
Absolutely. Yeah, it affects your SEO when you have those negative reviews coming in. I had a situation recently. I have a client here in Los Angeles. They own a medical spa. They do things like Botox injections and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so the person posted a negative review and put the company's name on the review and submitted it. So when I saw the negative review come in, I asked the nurses up front, and they said, we don't see that name in our database. And so when I looked more closely at the review, she had the wrong company. She's actually saying the wrong company on the negative
review.
Wow. And so I contacted Yelp to say, can you look at this negative review, because it has nothing to do with us. And I reached out to the person and I said, I'm sorry for your bad experience, but we are not that company. Can you please take that off and, you know, give the bad review to the other company down the street that you worked with? You're like, we have nothing to do with it.
Right.
And she wouldn't, she never replied. And, you know, we opened the ticket with Yelp and they couldn't do anything about it. So these things are going to happen. It's part of, you know, the online world. The goal is to get so many reviews that you push that negative review down. For me personally, when I go to a company's Yelp page and they have 100 reviews and all 100 are 5-star, that raises a flag for me in a bad way, because it can't be that you're 100% of the time. So I don't worry about the negative reviews coming in. You know, it's something that there are companies that do reputation management, but you know, again, it's going to be outreach to the person that gave the negative review to entice them to take off the negative review, and you give them the service for free next time, or you do something like that. But you know, that's not my cup of tea.
Right.
But you can
go ahead.
Sorry, you can engage the client that's unhappy. There's always a way to make it right. And I always encourage my clients to you know, reply to those negative reviews and say, we're sorry, we're only human. We didn't know that, you know, that was the case. We would like to make it right. Or how can we make it right? Or just engage them. So when I see that, I go on the company's Yelp page and I see that the brand is standing behind their service or their product, even though they got a 1-star negative review, I feel better about it than if they just didn't reply to it. Like, they're trying to make an effort to make it right. That's all you want. You know, you're not going to get perfection all the time. So if something goes wrong, you know, the brand is there saying, okay, what can I do? And if the person writes another 500-word reply that they're just really upset and how could you do this and this and that, and the brand again comes back with, you know, I understand, but, you know, what can we do to make this right? Here's my, you know, call me at this number or whatever. If they're making that effort, as a consumer, that's all I want. I want to know that if I'm upset, they're going to, if I feel like I got the short end of the stick, that they're there to help us out.
Right.
That's what I was going to ask you. Could you be proactive about it?
Absolutely.
You answer that. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
So you can be proactive and actually turn that to your benefit. And as you said, you are clearly demonstrating that you're proactive about challenges, because things happen.
Yeah. So on Yelp, you reply. If you have their phone number, you can text them or call them. You don't want to be too intrusive where you're calling. Sometimes people don't like it. They might be upset and they don't want to talk to you. So you can text them, you can email them, you can send them a letter, you know, saying, you know, you received the service. We see that you're unhappy. Here's what we'd like to offer you for your trouble. But be sure to put it on Yelp so that everybody else sees it.
I've even heard stories where you would receive a negative review, and by engaging the person, they either say, well, I was just having a bad day, and it corrects it, right? So it wasn't as bad as they thought, but you know, they had a fight with their spouse, which had nothing to do with your service. So,
yes.
Unless you're a couples counselor, right? And you
exactly.
So there's a way to deal with it, and what you're saying, yeah, it sounds like a proper way to be proactive instead of saying, oh, my God, I have a negative review, and now you go hide from it, address it.
Yes, especially with health, some of the healthcare clients that I have where, you know, they go to the dentist, they leave the office, and they feel horrible. And they get on Yelp,
right.
And they're upset. And then they wake up in the morning, and everything is fine.
Exactly.
So, you know, exactly. It happens.
Right. Let me ask you about blogs. Would you do the same thing for a blog, SEO?
Blog is probably the best way to get word out about your company on what you're doing. So because a lot of times you have your category pages, your product or service pages, and then those are all set, it's been optimized, and you're done. But you can take your blog and you could do a weekly blog. You can take this conversation and transcribe it and turn it into a blog. Probably be a couple thousand word blog article. So that way...
Sorry. I was going to say, what's the optimum amount of words for a blog? Because you're saying like, you know, almost 1,000 or something like that. So I thought like 400 or 500 might be good, but obviously you're saying more.
Well, the thing is, Google doesn't come out and tell you if you do this many word blog article, if you do it this many times a month, I'm going to rank you. There isn't a set manual to go off of. So what you need to do is you need to, let's say in a month, you do one article that's a couple thousand words, you do one that's 200, one that's 500, and then with the some of the apps that I mentioned to you, you can see which keywords, which articles are ranking. And that way you can kind of gauge to see what you want to do. And again, let's say the 500 word blog article is ranking well. So if you do, let's say that's doing well. If you do the next month only 500 word articles, that's not the best way to do it either. You need to mix them up. But I would do the better keywords. I would do with the longer, because a lot of times I just take, you know, a blog article that a client wrote, I transcribe it, I turn it into a video, and so when you go on the blog, you'll see on the page there will be a video that's for YouTube. If you click it, you could just watch it right there on the website blog, or you could read it. It's all on one page. You embed the video right on there on the website. So you're hitting two of the top search engines in Google and YouTube. Because some people, they don't want to sit here. Like, imagine this conversation that we're having now, your 1 hour show. If some people would want to read this whole thing and other people would want to hear it while they're jogging or, you know, whatever the case may be. And so you're able to double your audience. And so Google looks at YouTube for its algorithms and vice versa. So when it's seeing that you're hitting both, that's a bonus for your SEO.
Mm.
How interesting. Okay. So another question, and I'm sure our listeners are asking this to themselves, right? Because websites range from free, like you said, with Wix, on up to 7,000, 8,000, 12,000 for a little bit larger. To hire someone, because, you know, you're now being charged for your websites, but they're not always doing SEO on the back end. So to hire someone, say, like you, what would the fees run? I know it's kind of a hard question depending on what you need, but, you know, I'm sitting here thinking in my head, hey, can I afford you? We've got COVID going on. You know, we're kind of really tapped into trying to find, you know, trying to get our niche or trying to reach out to people. So, and you're like the perfect person, right? Because you're, this is how you get out there and this is how, you know, people can find you. So I'm just wondering what fees would run typically.
Okay. Well, it's a good question. I will tell you that my background is not in building sites. I'm not a webmaster.
Right.
I'm not a graphic designer. When I teach classes, that's one of the first things I tell them is that I'm not a techie. I'm the guy that you call in when the site is done and you want to monetize it. But I run in those circles. I know people that build out websites, especially WordPress is an easier platform. WordPress literally was created in order to build sites that will be Google will be happy to optimize. Literally, it's done so that Google can go in and spider the site and figure it out. So depending on what kind of site you're looking at, just to give you kind of a ballpark, like I said, there are apps that you could do for free, but if you want to sidestep that, the website's going to be anywhere from, I would say, $500, maybe up to $1,500, depending on if you want to put a shopping cart, how many pages you want to do, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just giving you a rough range, but that's usually what it costs.
That's so reasonable for what you're getting.
Right, it's come down a lot. Well,
yeah.
Well, it's come down considerably. I remember, 15 years ago, you would pay, almost $10,000 to get a website, and sometimes it was without a shopping cart.
Right. Wow.
So you're able to build out with the apps that they have now, with the platforms, you're able to build out the sites faster and cleaner and easier.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you want to just tell people how to reach you?
Sure. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm pretty much raised my whole life in a part of Los Angeles called the South Bay. And so the company name is This Is My South Bay. You can go to thisismysouthbay.com. And if you have any questions on your website, or if you want to know which keywords it's ranked for, or if you want to know any information about your competitors or anything like that, just click on the Book Now button and book a free 15-minute appointment with me. And be sure to mention Lori, and mention the show, and that's it. Lori and Ted.
Okay. And what is the button?
It's just the Book Now button. It's thisismysouthbay.com.
Oh, okay.
And then at the top there, there's a Book Now. You can book a 15-minute appointment.
Perfect.
And that's it.
Eric, a question. So keywords are important. You use an app, right? You have access to more than one app, so you're what you would call a professional. And so as you extract this information from behind sites and their keywords, and you look at the top 10, 20 sites, and you see they're all using the same or similar keywords. So now you know what the keywords are that will have the top 3 to 5 sites. But my question is, once you know what all those keywords are, even if you put all the same keywords, isn't that like, so what? Now everyone is using the same app. How do you differentiate yourself in a world, in this algorithmic world, that's looking at keywords and everyone's using the same keywords? Like, how do you rise up out of that?
Well, the app that I told you about, where it's checking your keywords, what you're ranked for, and what your competitors are ranked for, that's the starting point. So when you figure out, you have to kind of, sometimes I put, 1,000 keywords in front of someone, and depending on their budget, they might need to choose 5 keywords that month that we're going to target. So it has to be a keyword that has, a higher search volume and a lower competition level. So you kind of try to find that sweet spot. And then so once you do that, then starts the work. Then you need to build out the blog articles. You have to build out the links that point to those pages, et cetera. So that the first part is just to kind of put together your strategy. And then after that, you have to build out content. If you don't build out content, Google doesn't even know if you're in business. That's why a lot of these chiropractors or accountants, they spin up a site and then they don't touch it for 10 years. Google doesn't know if they're still in business. You always, whether it's once a month, once a week, whatever it is, consistently, you have to build out new pages on your website. You have to get some links coming in from other websites so that Google knows that you're in business, or else it's not going to rank you and it doesn't know which keywords are important to you. So if a particular keyword is important to you, if I use the pizza shop as an example, if their specialty is pepperoni and mushroom, they want to be ranked for pepperoni and mushroom pizza. They can write a blog article. They can show a picture about that pizza. They can tag the image with that keyword, so on and so forth. So Google knows that, oh, every they're blogging every day, and probably 10 days out of the month, they keep going back to this pepperoni and mushroom pizza. So let me rank them because they're high, you know, they're it seems like people are staying on the site and reading it. We're not getting any spam reviews. We're not getting any inappropriate. We're getting links. We're getting, okay, so let's, so there, the first part of what you were asking about, if everybody has this app, everybody can do it. That's just to give us a roadmap of what we're going to do. Like when I used to do jewelry, the jewelry is a vague keyword to go after. And it's so difficult to go after because there's so many jewelers out there, jewelry. But right. If you can find out, if you're selling a men's platinum diamond wedding band, if you go after that keyword phrase, there's going to be maybe 1,000 searches a month, but it's a very clean traffic. You're probably going to convert 2 to 3% of those visitors that come to your website from that keyword. So if you target that keyword instead of jewelry, which you're not going to rank for in the top 1,000 or 10,000, that way you can go after the niche keywords that work perfectly for you. That's what those tools are good for. It's not to find the keyword into your design. It's to find the keyword that is exactly what you're looking for, that when they land on your site looking for that keyword and you do that, it's a very high conversion rate.
Okay. So it's very much part of a branding strategy also, correct?
It could be used for a branding strategy. I use Google search mostly for sales. We're looking to make that phone ring. We're looking to have those phone
right.
bills. We're looking to have people come to the website. If they recognize your company name and they come to the website, all the better.
Okay. Lori?
No, it's just so cool and so fascinating because, you know, when they used to say there were cookies in the computer, and not to sound, you know, pardon the expression, blonde, but I really was like, oh, okay, there's these little robots and they're drinking milk and cookies and they're taking over my computer and it's shutting down and, you know, so, you know, we've come a long way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's super fascinating because, like, even blogs, like, I write for a lot of the interior design magazines, you know, so it's really helpful to hear this, to know how these things work and, you know, the different amounts of words and keywords and what to use and how to use it. So thank you.
Sure. There's, when you get into it, there's even when you upload your blog article, let's say on the back end, this article probably could use, you know, at least 500 words, or it'll say this
right.
section,
right.
you know, you have too many words that start with this one particular word. You might want to change it. Because sometimes you start with in addition or whatever. Or as a matter of fact, some bloggers will write the same thing over and over again. And there are apps that will kind of give you suggestions on cleaning it up, like one final polishing off before you upload it.
So this is a real strategy. I mean, this is, you know, you said 40 hours in a week to teach. I mean, this is turned into a real core competency. To as a service to provide.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's a big part of small businesses. Without this free traffic, and I say free, but it's not really free because you're going to put in your time, or you're going to hire someone to put in their time. And so there's
right.
you know, blogger outreach, and there's all kinds of things that need to be done to show Google that you are versed on this subject, whatever it is, whether it's pizza, interior design, jewelry, whatever the case may be. that I'm good at this. And here are the reviews to show it. Here are the social media things that are going on. Here are the links. Here's this. Here's that. It's part of a package that you're showing to Google that here's what I am. And so that doesn't happen easily because Google is very strict. And their ultimate goal is to make sure that they deliver the best possible search results to their users. So that's why they're investigating your site and your company, watching what you're doing on social media, your reviews, how often you're posting, everything. And so it is free.
Go ahead. It's free.
It's free if you're going to do it on your own. But keep in mind, it's going to take a lot of time to do it. But once you start getting that traffic coming in,
you have to maintain it too.
Yes, you have to maintain it. But once you're in, it's a beautiful thing.
Well, I
so
see
cool.
You, what you're saying, the time it takes, that I was going to ask you, how long do you have any idea how much time it took you to get to where you are, to the level of expertise you have now? And I'm not asking how long you did this. I'm asking how long did it take for you to be the expert that you are now?
The thing is, it's almost like I've been marinating in this for years. So when I was in jewelry, when the economy crashed during the Great Recession, I couldn't give away a diamond. You know, nobody wanted to buy jewelry. So I had to re-educate myself, and I thought digital marketing is, we're not going to be able to survive without it. And so while working full-time and laying off some employees, so I was working even more, while working full-time, I went back to school, and I got my degree in marketing. And then I ended up making a circle of friends that were in digital or in social media or in computer design, graphic design, what have you. And so I've been in this for, going on 12 years.
Okay.
So it's not, it's not something that happens overnight. And
right.
I think that I mentioned it earlier, it's a moving target because, today it's Facebook, tomorrow it's Instagram, it might be something else that comes up. The SEO algorithms change every so often.
Exactly.
So you have to be dialed in to this. You can't just, it's not like learning a trade. Before I learned how to set diamonds. I learned how to set diamonds and that was it. You know it forever. It's not like that with tech.
Right. Like now it's TikTok and it used to be that other social media thing.
Exactly.
And then it was Instagram and Pinterest and now there's something else,
exactly.
But who knows, that'll make it.
Right.
So it's not.
So exactly. Eric, let people know how they can get a hold of you again. Just whatever contact information you'd like to give, available, please.
If they could go to thisismysouthbay.com and my email's there, my phone number's there, everything is there. And I'd love to hear from them and see if I can answer any of their questions.
Right. And if anybody is looking, I did post it on the Facebook page for Lori Miller. It's my personal page. So it's up there. And Ted, you're tagged on that. So it should be on Ted's page as well.
All right. Thank you.
Perfect. Hey, it's been great having you here, Eric. Man.
Thank you.
What
fun.
A wealth of knowledge you have. Yeah.
Thank you. This was fun. I hope I didn't talk your head off about it. I hope I answered all your questions. I'm sure you're going to be driving home and then you're going to think, or tomorrow morning you're going to wake up and you're going to think, what about this question? What about that question? So you're welcome to drop me an email if you have any other questions.
Right. I already did.
You've been
so
great.
You're hired and I'll see. So thank you so much, Eric. This was hugely helpful and hugely informative.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to call you a Jedi Knight of SEO, Eric. You've been knighted.
Thank you.
Exactly.
You're welcome.
Thank you all. Have a good night, and we'll see you next Thursday at 7 p.m.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Good evening. Take care.
Bye.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You, Eric. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.